The reading tonight is from Matthew 8, and that can be found on page 980. Matthew 8, starting at verse 14. Matthew 8, 14. And when Jesus entered Peter's house, he saw his mother-in-law lying sick with a fever. He touched her hand, and the fever left her, and she rose and began to serve him. That evening they brought to him many who were oppressed by demons, and he cast out the spirits with a word, and healed all who were sick. This was to fulfill what was spoken by the prophet Isaiah. He took our illnesses and bore our diseases.
Thank you, Jenny, very much indeed. And may I add my welcome to Nigel's. It's good to see you here this evening. Sickness, suffering, global disorder, and death are seen in the Bible as evidence that all is not well in our world. Evidence that our world is under judgment, and that that judgment is the judgment of God, our Creator. If we had time, we could go back to the book of Genesis, where the pain and frustration of work, the battle of the sexes, the hostility of the environment, the agony of childbirth, and the meaninglessness of life that ends in sickness and death is seen in Genesis as the result of God's just judgment on humanity following our rejection of his loving rule. Jesus describes the warfare of the nations, the earthquake, the famine, as the birth pangs of God's judgment. Paul describes the groaning of this creaking creation as its bondage to decay, a decay to which it has been subjected by God in judgment. And John, in the book of Revelation, right at the other end of the Bible, describes the sending out of the four horsemen of the apocalypse, death, famine, warfare, and conquest, as being an act of God in judgment. We need to be very clear that sickness and suffering are not by any means always linked directly to something that you or I have personally done wrong. Sometimes they are. More usually they are not. But the assumption in the Bible is that sickness and suffering and global disorder and death are evidence for us that all is not well with the world, that there is something the matter in God's world. And the thing that is the matter is that God's judgment is being expressed against his creation. The thing is, at our stage of life, we are frequently, and I use the word first person plural with the broadest possible sort of sense, at our stage of life, we are frequently shielded here in the West from sickness, suffering, and death. We turn a blind eye to it, and we kind of assume that it will never happen to me. So as I was preparing to speak on this passage this evening, with the healing of Peter's mother-in-law and the healing of all the diseases in that town and the surrounding area, my mind was drawn to 30 houses, the inhabitants of 12 of which I know reasonably well. Here's a fairly representative cross-section of one part of this city, fairly middle-income, reasonably prosperous, like the families which I guess many of us will have come from. One family with a child born with such medical issues that her whole life has been a sequence of operations to attempt to give her a normal life. Another family with a child with medium-level Asperger's syndrome. You can see him pacing the squares of the street. one adult with Alzheimer's, led in his 70s like a 3-year-old by his magnificent wife. Another adult with Parkinson's, you can see her shaking her way to the car with her husband. Another child, left recently, an epileptic, woken at night with a request to look after the family by desperate parents rushing to hospital. Another family, torn apart by a vitriolic divorce, children disorientated and insecure. Now, I only know the inhabitants of 12 of the houses of the 30, but at least one in three is devastated by sickness, suffering, disorder, and decay. And for you and me to try and pretend that all is well with the world in which we live, when that is the reality, is to live in cloud cuckoo land. Now, you may just say, well, that's London. I mean, I've just come in from the country, and, you know, right back where I come from, well, we're not like London. So let me take you to 12 farms in the heart of the greenest and pleasantest part of England's green and pleasant land. And these incidents are taken from 12 families over the last 10 or 15 years. One child with Down syndrome, one mother knocked down and trodden to death in an appalling farm accident by a prize bull, one family persistently pursued by the black dog of depression, one suicide, one heroin addict, one vitriolic divorce, one mentally handicapped child. You may say, well, living next to you, William, is a pretty rum deal. I'm going to move somewhere else. But, you know, if you were just to stop and think about it, I think you would find that all around you. And I wonder how you make sense of it. Well, I guess for some of us, we're tempted, aren't we, to bury our head in the sand. It hasn't happened to us yet. We might get lucky. We might have enough medical insurance. We might do enough visits to the gym. But let me assure you, you won't be able to play the ostrich forever. Some of us might just resign ourselves to it. I think that's been the way of British culture for the last 30 years or so. All we are is a kind of random collection of chemicals brought together in a sack of skin by chance. Don't ask why, that's just the way of the world. As one professor has written, DNA neither knows nor cares, DNA just is, and we dance to its music. Eat, drink, and be merry, therefore. Tomorrow we die. Or at least tomorrow we might be the one in a wheelchair. But if you do simply resign yourself to it like that, if that is the way of the world, and if we are only a cocktail of chemicals in a bag of skin, then we have no right to cry out against God that that's not fair, because we don't believe he's there. And yet I find that people who believe that carry on crying out against God. As if we know deep down inside that things shouldn't really be like that. Even though we pretend that we think they should, because we're just a bag of chemicals in a sack of skin. The Bible tells us that sickness, suffering, global disorder, and death are clear evidence of God's judgment on our world. All is not well. Things might be so different, but we human beings, why, in an act of Adam shared by us all, we shake our fist at God. We seize control of the steering wheel and we say to him, look, I can manage this quite easily myself, thank you very much. And we career recklessly at the wheel of this roller coaster as it goes off the rails. And God, in his just judgment at us humans, for willfully shaking our fist at him, expresses his right displeasure in judgment. And the impact of his displeasure, his judgments on our world run deep like kind of fissures through our world. Our world is under judgment, all is not well. And if only we'll take our head out of the sand and have a look around us, we can see that. In our physical health, in our human relationships, in our environment, in our vulnerability to evil, in our ultimate decay, and in our death. Now, you can't draw a direct line between me and my rebellion against God, but this world in which we live creaks and groans as the fissures of my rebellion run through it. Let me express it a bit like this. As an 18-year-old, I took a gap year. They were quite the thing to do in those days. And I went with three friends to Canada. And on our way, we went to stay with some remarkably wealthy friends of one of the guys in our group. They lived in North America in one of those houses that you see on telly or that you go to visit in your 60s when you've got into sort of, really boredom and you're going around all other people's houses and looking at them. You know the sort of thing, you know. I don't do it. I was put to stay in a bedroom stuffed full of antiques. There was a large Georgian full-length mirror, and I emptied the pockets of my jeans onto one part of the bed, there was room for about six in it, and slept on the night on the other corner. And the next morning I thought, in that kind of place, one probably ought to make one's bed. And so I got hold of the end of the duvet and shook it like that. And a 25-cent piece sped in slow motion across the room to the center of the Georgian mirror. There was a sharp crack, and in an instant, the whole thing was shot to pieces. It wasn't very funny. I don't know what you're laughing at. You know, you can't necessarily, you can sometimes, trace the impact of my own expression of rebellion to the fissure that I find in my own life. Sometimes you can. But from that act of rebellion that all of us, if you like, share in, are involved in, that act of Adam at the beginning of the Bible where he shook his fist at God, and that all of us express as we push God off to the corner of our life and say, I will do it my way. From that act of humanity, God's judgment, God's displeasure is felt running like a fissures through the whole of our created order, such that sickness, suffering, global disorder, decay and death is something that all of us experience. And I don't know about you, there'll be a lot of new people here this evening, but for those of you who've been here for the last couple of weeks, we've been looking at Matthew 8. I think that's what makes Matthew 8 such a glorious chapter. Because Jesus is presented in Matthew 8. Jesus, if you like, bursts onto the scene in Matthew 8 as God's rescuing king who has come ahead of time to show us that in his kingdom he will roll back God's judgment on our world when he comes to rule in his glorious kingdom. And Peter's mother-in-law, like the centurion's servant and the leper before her, makes the point for us gloriously. If you've lost the page, it's there on page 980. There will be no mother-in-law jokes as we look at Peter's mother-in-law. It is a quite glorious incident. And we need to remember that fever in those days was deadly serious, literally. Listen to one quote. Infectious disease proper was undoubtedly the single greatest threat to life in antiquity, with epidemics killing half or more of the populations of the world's larger cities. And a contemporary quote from the first century, what do the swords of tyrants do? They kill. What does fever do? Nothing else. It kills. Matthew chapter 8, verse 14. When Jesus entered Peter's house, he saw his mother-in-law lying sick with a fever. He touched her hand. The fever left her, and she rose and began to serve him. No consultation, no ambulance, no antibiotic, no paracetamol, no convalescence, no outpatient's visit. She jumps to her feet, and to show that the cure, the healing, is instantaneous, she starts to serve him. And the result is verse 16. Isn't exactly what you would expect. That evening they brought to him many who were oppressed by demons, and he cast out the spirits with a word and healed all who were sick. That is hardly surprising, is it? I mean, if it were me, let me tell you, I would force open the door of the house where the child with Asperger's is. And I would carry him personally in my arms to Jesus. I would take hold of the Alzheimer's and Parkinson's sufferers, pile them in my car and drive them wherever I had to. And I would pick up the epileptic and race to Jesus with him in my arms. Verse 16. He healed all who were sick. The hospitals were emptied. The doctors were out of a job. The surgeries were deserted. The health service budget was reduced to nil, and the medical schools were closed down. The point, surely, is that Jesus, God's King, will, when his kingdom comes, roll back God's judgment on our world. Not that he has come to do it physically right now in this point of time. Jesus' kingdom is physically where Jesus is physically. He is now physically in heaven. So it's not for now. It is a picture, a window, if you like, ahead of time to show us that Jesus is God's King who has come to roll back God's judgment. I wonder what you make of the suffering and sickness and global disorder that is all around us. You know, we can just bury our head in the sand. It's possible to do that. It is especially possible to do that in London as we absorb ourselves in the study and the work and the social life, the sport, the school. When we turn on the telly or open the paper or open our eyes to look around us, well, our head may emerge from the sand for a moment. I wonder what you make of all the sickness and suffering around us. It's possible to say, I'm just a bag of chemicals. I'm only here by chance. And to immerse myself in the eat, drink, and be merry. You can have as much pleasure as you want, as much passion as you want, as many substances as you want here in London. But one day, we may just begin to lift our eyes out of the chemical bag. And as we lift our eyes, here is Jesus, the man of history. I wonder if you've investigated him. He bursts onto the stage of this world, and with a word he heals and cleanses and drives out and rolls back God's hand of judgment to show that he is God's rescuing king. But there's a lot more than that in our reading this evening, and I want us to turn now to verse 17 for the second part of our talk. The rescuing king will roll back God's judgment. But now in verse 17, you can see Matthew is wanting to show us what's going on. So this is a very useful little window into what Matthew understands, and therefore what we should understand to be happening. So glance down at verse 17, and you'll see Matthew quotes from the prophet Isaiah. This was to fulfill what was spoken by the prophet Isaiah. He took our illnesses and bore our diseases. It's Matthew's own translation of the Hebrew, of Isaiah 53. And when the New Testament writers quote, they almost always quote the verse with the context of the verse in mind. That is, the verses surrounding it from the Old Testament. And it is quite an extraordinary quote. Given that Jesus is presented here as God's rescuing king, one might expect Matthew to quote from the first third of Isaiah, which is all about Emmanuel, God with us. Or, given that Jesus is presented here as God's rescuing king, one might expect Matthew to quote from the third third, the last third of Isaiah, which is all about God's conquering victor. Instead, Matthew quotes from the central section of Isaiah, which is all about God's suffering servant. I wonder if you can see what Matthew is doing. He's wanting us to see that not only is Jesus God's rescuing king, who will one day in his kingdom roll back the impact of God's judgment, at the same time he is wanting us to see how he will do that, that Jesus is the suffering servant who will roll back God's judgment through paying the price of God's judgment on the cross. Let's turn back to Isaiah 53 for just a moment, would you? Page 742. Page 742. It'll be really a great help if we all go there to page 742 and verses 4 to 6. Here is the suffering servant. Isaiah says, "Surely he has borne our griefs and carried our sorrows," in chapter 53, verse 4. "Surely he has borne our griefs and carried our sorrows, yet we esteemed him stricken, smitten by God, and afflicted. But he was wounded for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. Upon him was the chastisement that brought us peace, and with his stripes we are healed. All we like sheep have gone astray. We have turned everyone to his own way, and the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all." Transgression is the willful act of human rebellion against God. I don't know if you're somebody who sings in the bath or the shower. If you are, you will have sung, surely you will have sung, "I did it my way." Have you sung that in the bath? If you haven't, you're obviously somebody who doesn't sing in the bath. Maybe you don't take a bath, I don't know. Great tune. Wretched words. "I did it my way." Transgression is me doing it my way in God's world. It's the thing that has brought God's judgment on our world. Iniquity is the indelible stain of the actions that flow from our transgression. Hidden attitudes, words, deeds, things seen and unseen, things done, things of which we are sometimes so ashamed that we cringe at the thought of anybody else knowing about them. And as we look at the verses, we can see that this suffering servant, promised by Isaiah hundreds of years before the arrival of Jesus, is being punished deliberately by God on behalf of our transgression. It's spelled out for us in verse 5. Just look at it with me for a moment, and you can see the language. He was wounded for, on behalf of, our transgressions. He was crushed for, on behalf of, our iniquities. Upon him was the chastisement that brought us peace, and with his stripes we are healed. All we like sheep have gone astray, we've turned everyone to his own way, and the Lord, that is God in heaven, has laid on him the iniquity of us all. So that what Matthew now does is to bring together the idea of Jesus the rescuing king, who will roll back the impact of God's judgment on our world in his glorious new creation, together with Jesus the suffering servant, who has paid for God's judgment, to show us that this glorious King Jesus will open up, if you like, the gates of his new creation where suffering is dealt with and tears are wiped away through satisfying God's judgment at our rebellion in his world. And I want us to think very hard about this just for a couple of moments. I think all of us long for a day when the suffering, sickness and global disorder of this world is rolled back. That's what things like Give Peace a Chance is all about, or Feed the World, or the Day of the World Poverty and the White Wristband. Sometimes we see it suggested to us as a glorious dream that we might all hope for. I think Disney has shown it to us in The Lion King, when Scar rules the kingdom. The hyenas take over. The kingdom is decimated. They ravage the population. The vegetation dies. And Disney presents us with a picture of a broken, damaged world. Have you seen it? You're looking totally blank. I cannot believe you have not seen it. Simba returns. Here is the rescuing king. But how is the damage and disorder and destruction that has flowed from the rejection of the rightful ruler, how is it put right? Do you remember? It rains. And that's it. A bit of water. Oh, and of course they sing The Circle of Life. And then it's all right. Even my 10-year-old can see that that is one of the cheesiest moments in the whole of Hollywood sentimental history. How can a bit of water cleanse away the indelible damage and debt that has flowed from the wickedness of rejecting the rightful ruler? How can that be right? What do you say of a judge who says to a rape victim, "Just have a shower. It'll be all right, dear." No, for the wickedness of you and me in pushing God to the edge of our lives, which has resulted in these deep fissures running through our creation, for that to be put right, there must be some just right way of God's pure judgment being satisfied. And Matthew wants us to see at this stage of his gospel that the mighty ruler of God's kingdom, his heavenly king, will bring about his heavenly kingdom through satisfying God's judgment perfectly, carrying the payment for God's judgment, so that as Jesus the king stepped down into human history, his appearance was marred beyond human semblance, his form beyond that of the children of mankind. As Jesus the King stepped down into human history, he grew up like a young plant, like a root out of dry ground. As Jesus the King stepped into human history, he had no form or majesty that we should look at him, no beauty that we should desire him. He was despised and rejected by men, a man of sorrows, acquainted with grief. As Jesus the King stepped down into human history, he was wounded, crushed, beaten, chastised, And as Jesus the King stepped down into human history and was nailed to the cross, the Lord laid on him the iniquity of us all. That's no sentimental Walt Disney whitewash, is it? This is God the Son satisfying the right indignation of God the Father willingly, obediently, so that he can roll back the cloud of God's judgment. And so that we, if we trust him and follow him, can step out into his new kingdom, his new creation, where there will be no tears, no suffering, no sadness, no sin. What kind of church are we here? You know, you may be visiting us, you may be saying, oh, what kind of a church are they? What are they like? Well, there are any number of different ways you can describe St. Helens. Looks a bit like a museum sometimes, doesn't it? You look around. Fundamentally, we are a church that will be open and upfront about our world and our own personal responsibility for having rejected God, our ruler. You'll hear us talking about that. We won't stick our head in the sand. We won't live in cloud cuckoo land. We will be realistic about our fallen world under God's judgment. We are a church that is open and upfront about Jesus and about the glorious future that he has ahead for every single one of us who trust him. And over and over and over again, we will be open and upfront about the cross of Jesus. Because it was on the cross that Jesus Christ bore our sin in his body. We're going to pause there. Take a moment just to reflect. And then Jamie and Susanna Charles are going to lead us in prayer.